The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.
Smart, sexy, kinky, fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. You know, I haven't had that many return guests yet because I've only been on the air. Well, we're now in the third season of the show. But these two were on the show already, and we only had a couple segments to talk, and they definitely need the whole hour. So let me remind you about who they are. Mark A. Michaels and Patricia Johnson are a devoted married couple. They have been creative collaborators, teaching and writing about sexuality and tantra together since 1999. Michaels and Johnson are the authors of Partners in Passion, Great Sex Made Simple, Tantra for Erotic Empowerment, and The Essence of Tantra Sexuality. Their books have garnered numerous awards, including Independent Publishing Awards, a Forward Reviews Award, and USA Book News Best Books, among others. They are also the creators of the meditation CD set, Anandra Nidra, Blissful Sleep. So for all you meditators out there, I really recommend that. To support the Pleasure Positive community in New York, they co-founded Pleasure Salon in 2007. And I am so excited to welcome them back to the show. Hi, Mark and Patricia.
Hey, Tristan.
Hi, great to be here.
So your newest book is called Partners in Passion, A Guide to Great Sex, Emotional Intimacy, and Long-Term Love. And it opens with some myths about sex, love, and relationships. So I thought that would be a good place to start if we went over a few of these myths. Okay?
Sure. Sounds good.
Well, they're by all means not all of the myths.
No, that would be a whole book. But okay, myth number six, desiring someone else is a form of infidelity.
Yeah, we it's surprising how often you hear that from kind of mainstream society and mainstream people. And it's a very strange notion when you think about it. I mean, just because you get into a long-term relationship with someone, that means that all of your desire goes away. Makes no sense.
Plus, we all have a variety of people, situations, things that trigger our erotic self, and to suddenly expect that to shift and only occur pointed toward one person seems not normal, I guess. No normal here.
Right.
But if it happens naturally that you're in a relationship and you really only feel desire for your single other partner, so be it. That's wonderful. You know, it just isn't very common. And what typically happens is that people who buy into this notion will actually end up suppressing their sexuality in order to keep it narrowed in and focused on that one other person.
And by keeping it funneled toward your significant other, you're kind of forcing your whole libido into a small corner. And really, your sex life with your beloved might suffer because you're curtailing your erotic self.
You know, sort of an ancillary component of this is that a lot of people think that watching porn is tantamount to infidelity, or masturbating is tantamount to infidelity. I mean, and so if Dr. Phil says, you know, people should tell their partners to choose between the porn and the relationship.
Which just seems so shaming and so damaging.
Absolutely. People are throwing away years of goodwill. Sometimes they have children together over something that, an activity that is a private sexual activity. So you have your sexual self and your sexual life with yourself. And that really should be kept private. It's not, you don't have to be your partner's confessor, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
But also, just to be really clear, desiring someone else, it also doesn't mean you have to act on that desire. I mean, can you talk more about just what it means to acknowledge the desire, not necessarily even act on it, and how that could be healthy for a relationship?
Yeah, great point. I forget that some people think of, you know, if you think it, therefore you have to do it.
And right.
Yeah. Thank goodness that's not the case for humans.
But I mean, actually openly acknowledging and talking about desire for somebody else can be a way of intensifying your connection with that one partner, if you are in a chosen monogamous kind of arrangement, because then you can actually have great sort of hot conversations about the things that turn you on about other people, or, you know, make a list of movie stars that you would break your monogamous agreement if they knocked on the door. You know, it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So I think you really seem to advocate a more playful approach and less of like sort of trying to shut it down whenever you feel.
Is you dropped out there.
Oh, I'm sorry. You advocate, it seems like in this book, a more playful approach, like rather than trying to just, if you feel desire for someone else, just shutting it down, whether it's a stranger, a coworker, a friend, an ex, whoever it is, or a celebrity, but to just express it openly and, you know, bring a level of honesty to the relationship where you both feel like, okay, you can tell me that you think the waitress is hot, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Sure. I mean, it shouldn't be such a big deal, and it should be something that people can deal with in a playful way. And by making it playful and making it just open and not so heavy, you're creating actually a better way of communicating with your partner. We don't have to turn every conversation about sexuality and desire into, you know, a melodrama. It can be light and playful, and it really should be.
Another myth that you tackle that I think is one of the biggest, which I hear all the time, is myth number 8, sex should be spontaneous.
Right. And this is the myth that sometimes gets people going, actually. And they're like, what? You know, what about romance? What about, you know, making it hot and erotic? And the fact is when we're dating, we're actually planning for our sexual encounters.
I love this idea. When you're dating, you are, in fact, scheduling sex.
Yes, right?
Most of the time, yeah.
Most of the time, right. I mean, obviously, you need consent, you need all that stuff, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Right. And I wager to say that hardly any sex is spontaneous, because even if you were at an event and you did hook up with someone that night, chances are you were thinking about hooking up with that person for several minutes before it happened. I mean, I don't think people get on the elevator together and by the 10th floor upon first sight have spontaneous sex.
Right. It's a little more difficult than that.
Yeah. So it's a big myth.
Yeah. Know? I mean, life is not a 70s porno movie with the pizza boy coming over.
We are ordering pizza tonight, by the way.
I know. I mean, if you know anyone who's ever delivered food for a living, I have, and they don't get any action at all. I mean, I I've asked them. I've said, like, no one's flirted with you, or like a repeat customer who you see like on the regular. They're like, no, they really want their food. Even when they're alone, like they just want their food. Okay. Well, another thing, you know, you challenge a lot of just common beliefs about sex and relationships. And another thing you argue is that communication, specifically verbal communication, isn't always the answer. So explain that.
Yeah, that's a very important point. And I think we do love verbal communication. It's necessary in any relationship. But if you try to talk your way out of a difficult situation, or if you're feeling not connected with each other in other ways, emotionally, physiologically, if you want to get kind of new agey about it, energetically, if those things aren't there, more often than not, talking is going to back you into a corner. And is very likely to lead to polarization.
And the science behind this is the part of your brain that is active when you're in falling in love, and that is the nonverbal part of your brain. So chances are you spend a lot of time connecting nonverbally with your partner before you had those conversations that lasted till 3 a.m., right? Where you just can't stop talking, but you're also gazing deeply into one another's eyes. That's the operative.
Okay, well, I also want to talk about how to fight well, because I thought there were some really good tips in this book about like how to have a fight and do it well, because of course we're always going to have fights. So, but first we need to take a break and hear from our great sponsors. So stay with us. Coming up, we are going to talk to Mark and Patricia about fighting the correct way, about their definition of compersion, and about designer relationships. So don't go anywhere. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station.
Number one talk station.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423. Or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today I'm talking with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson about their newest book called Partners in Passion, A Guide to Great Sex, Emotional Intimacy, and Long-Term Love. So before the break, we talked a little bit about verbal communication. And I also think there are some interesting tips in this book about how to have a fight with your partner or how to have a conflict with your partner and not sort of blow the whole relationship up. And I'm hoping you'll share some of those tips.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's very sad when couples, you know, are in conflict, and then if they don't have the wherewithal, they can start to throw what I like to say, throwing punches at one another, because you're feeling very hurt. And we do have some specific ways to avoid falling into that pitfall.
And the first one, going back to the nonverbal, is if you can, and you've established the ability to do eye gazing as a formal practice, you can start to feel that there's conflict. And if you can, instead of immediately diving into it, if you can eye gaze first.
We take a time out. We call it taking a time out, literally, in silence.
That can bring you into a greater sense of harmony and more feeling more connected. And then it may enable you to turn to the issue without quite as much intensity and to turn to it as a team rather than as two people fighting over something that's in between you. So that's always for us the foundation, is try to establish a nonverbal connection first.
I'm sorry, Mark.
No, go ahead.
But what they're finding is that couples who claim to have a conflict-free relationship tend to break up quicker at an earlier time than couples who do have conflicts that don't break them apart. So what conflicts can be changed and seen as a way of deepening your intimacy and maneuvering through those troubled seas and troubled waters can be a way of deepening your connection. So, I mean, I think that's a very important point, that's really, people think, oh, if we fight, it's over. And that's not true at all. It's normal.
Well, this is something that was super Buddhist in your book, which was a lesson from one of your Tantra teachers, Mark, which is like, when really bad things happen, it's, he called them something like another fucking learning opportunity, or am I getting that right?
AFGO, another fucking growth opportunity.
Growth opportunity. Okay. Yeah. So looking at these conflicts or differences or discrepancies, you have a whole chapter on that, as opportunities to kind of go deeper and get to know each other and yourselves better, rather than to simply fight for the sake of fighting.
Yeah, that's certainly one piece of it. I think the other piece of it is, you know, and it's going back to that whole communication is important, but talking is overrated aspect, is that people often get so hung up on the talking, and in the expression, we have a myth, you know, relationships are about getting your needs met. They get so focused on what they think their own needs that they forget that they're in a relationship with someone, and they forget to be kind. And the argument turns into a kind of general session of grievances. And again, this is something we've seen it again and again with couples. And it's like, if you don't stay on the topic that's at hand and you all of a sudden turn it into all about your partner's shortcomings, you're going to do something damaging, mm-hmm. almost guaranteed, or say something damaging rather.
Yeah. These grievances are, you know, you always, you never, you will always be this type of person. You know, things like that, statements that are like that are not inviting.
Right. They feel very final and very fixed.
Yes. Yes.
So we go through this list of things that you should ask yourself before you say something. And is it true? Is it kind?
Is it the appropriate time?
Is it helpful?
Is it necessary?
And does it improve on the silence? Some of these are familiar to people, I'm sure, but you know what's usually not on this list is that appropriate time element.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so often people don't have the wherewithal to wait until what they have to say can be received.
Right. And sometimes they wait till they're both going to bed. I mean, this is the place where you make love, you know, and you're bringing up grievances right before bed. I mean, we advise that people just find some designated corner in the house or something. Just go, if you're going to have an intense discussion, go somewhere else other than where you're having sex. You don't want your brain associating anything but super sexy things with that room. So,
right. You also talk about compersion. Listeners of the show have probably heard this term before. Compersion is a term that was coined in the 90s by polyamorous people. Some people think of it as the opposite of jealousy, but you have kind of a different definition of compersion. Tell me about that.
Yeah. We don't think that it's the opposite of jealousy, actually. It can be an antidote, but it's not the opposite.
Yeah, compersion, kind of in the original meaning, was the capacity to take pleasure in the fact that your partner was engaging and enjoying someone else sexually. We'd like to carry it well beyond the realm of sexuality. One of the things we say kind of jokingly is that compersion is empathy on steroids. So the idea being that really any area of your partner's emotional life, anything that brings them pleasure, can be an opportunity for you to get a little vicarious
buzz from it all.
Vicarious kick from the pleasure, and also to really be a more supportive partner. So one of the examples that we use when we talk about this from our own lives is that Patricia is a few years back got certified as a wildlife rehabilitator in New York State. And about a year ago, ended up going to the Smithsonian School of Conservation and getting some graduate certifications in herpetology. And I'll let her tell the story about it.
So my background is in opera, but I also I saw this announcement in one of the newsletters that this course was being offered, and I showed it to Mark, and I said, "Oh, that's so sad. I really wish I could be someone who could take a course like this, but alas, I only have a bachelor's in music." Right? He got very quiet, and he turned to me, and he said, "Oh, you must take that course." And I'm like, "Really?" And he's like, "I think this is important for you to do." And he was so behind me that within 30 minutes, I had the head instructor on the phone. And he said, "No, you're exactly what I'm looking for." And Mark was super, super supportive. I was gone about 2 weeks doing work from morning to night. And that's a case of compersion where he got so into bringing out the best in me that how would you describe it?
Well, it was a fairly sizable amount of money. It was, I think it was more than 2 weeks. It was a lot of time apart, but not just apart, but we really barely were able to talk during that time. But I couldn't, I love her. I couldn't not encourage her and support her in doing something that would be that meaningful. And the trade-off, I'm much happier that she's able to have that kind of happiness.
That's awesome. Okay. Now, the other thing that you talk about in your book is you want to kind of break down this dichotomy between monogamous and non-monogamous. And you prefer a term that I think you borrow from Ken Haslam called designer relationships. So tell me what a designer relationship is.
Oh, I guess in a nutshell, designer relationship is mutuality, mutually deciding with your partner or partners how your relationship is going to be and the purpose behind it. And this is something that's very, very dynamic and changes day to day, but it's always a co-creation and mutual endeavor.
And Ken was very generous to give us his blessing to use this term. We think it's great because he also came up with a term at one point, swally, which was a combination of swinger and polyamorous, because although it's not talked about that much, those communities have a lot more overlap than some people might think. But then he went on to designer relationships because it's even more inclusive. What we like, one of the things we like about it is that it implies that you're not in any given category. You're in a constant state of potentially redesigning and redefining what your partnership is. So you may be in an open relationship or in a poly relationship for, 8 or 10 years, and then you may end up being monogamous for a while. And these aren't absolute hard-bound categories that people have to lock themselves into for the rest of their lives.
And what we really have trouble with is the false dichotomy. If you use the monogamous word, everyone kind of gets like crazy and they can't hear your message. And the fact is a lot of people claim to be adamant and stand by the institution of monogamy or marriage, but no one really has the same definition. I don't think any two people have the same definition.
Yeah, I certainly interviewed people for my book, a couple that identified as monogamous, and they were allowed to do BDSM play with other people. They were allowed to do manual stimulation, masturbation, oral sex, strap-on sex, orgasms, just no intercourse. And they define themselves as monogamous. And so, like, far be it from me to call them something else.
Yeah, right. So,
well, I just read a book called Swinging in America. I think it probably came out about the same time as Opening Up. So I don't know if you caught it or not, but it's a really, really good and in-depth sociological study of people in the swinging lifestyle and all kinds of aspects of it. But one of the things that the authors do is they break monogamy down into three components. There's sexual monogamy, there's emotional monogamy, and there's practical monogamy. Practical meaning, how your household, your family structure, finances, and things like that. And it can be really helpful to break it apart. Now, in the realm of sexual monogamy, we don't there may not be clear definitions about what that means for people.
Right. Yeah, what's sex?
Right.
But at least if you start thinking about it as not just a monolith, but as this kind of at least three part structure, you can say, well, I'm in a relationship that is non-exclusive sexually, but I'm emotionally deeply pair bonded with someone. So maybe that's a form of monogamy. Maybe it's not. But again, I can define it. And maybe I'll fall in love with someone else next week. So then maybe I won't be emotionally monogamous for a while. And practical is a huge area as well that, you know, I think especially in the poly community, there's all kinds of attempts to reinvent that component.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're going to take another break. I want to talk next about coming out, about causing a ruckus on the internet, and we're going to answer your questions. You guys sent us some really good questions this week, and Mark and Patricia are going to answer them for you. So stay with us. Don't go anywhere.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Experience love with a little help from nature's soothing ingredients with Astroglide Natural Personal Lubricant. This all-natural and botanical formula lets you get in touch with your wild side, all while keeping it green. Astroglide Natural Personal Lubricant is glycerin, paraben, and alcohol-free, and it's made with aloe vera, vitamins C and E, and chamomile. But with the same second-only-to-nature feel that you get with your regular Astroglide. Visit astroglide.com to get your free sample and start hitting it green between the sheets today.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Today I'm talking with Mark A. Michaels and Patricia Johnson, who are teachers and writers and the author of the new book, Partners in Passion, A Guide to Great Sex, Emotional Intimacy, and Long-Term Love. So I have known you for many, many years. And previous to this, you have written about Tantra, which is one of your primary things that you teach about. And this book is really a departure for you in that you come out about being in a designer relationship. You come out about being a little bit kinky. And it seems to me, though, even that you travel in the sex positive world and that many people in the Tantra world are very sex positive, was there a point at which you felt like this may be too risky for us to put this really personal stuff about our relationship out there?
Yeah, I think in between us, I'm the one that was a little more reticent. You know, there's a benefit of just being normalizing all of this, and it helps people understand things. But I don't want to put our relationship up to be a target. And that line is something I've, you know, really worried about negotiating. That said, anytime we teach publicly, the feedback about our personal stories is always amazingly positive. And I think it gives a sense of authenticity to your writing. If you're like, yeah, we live it too. This is what happened to us, you know, instead of standing back and saying, well, studies say that couples, you know, to bring the reader more into a personal range with us.
Yeah, I mean, I think, Patricia, I kind of personally was at a point with this book where I was just like, you know, let's just be forthright about it and not mince words at all. But I think Patricia's got a very, very valid point, and her concerns were very valid. We treasure our relationship, and it does risk attracting a lot of negative judgments. There's still a huge stigma in our culture around any kind of alternative. And, you know, there is that element. So, you know, what I hope is that's changing, and that our being out on this level inspires people rather than, you know, causes them to judge us. So,
well, I think it makes it really relatable. I mean, you have these stories of lots of different people and lots of different couples that run throughout the book. But the story of your relationship really, for me, is the undercurrent which brings this all together. And I think that one of the things that's so fascinating is that you started out where many people are, which was like having all these judgments about these alternative relationship and sexuality communities. And you own those judgments. And, yeah, you know, we thought these kinky people were really dark and twisted. And then we got there and we were like, wait, they're really fun and playful for the most part, you know? So, I mean, there are these great sort of revelations in the book about yourselves that I feel like people are really going to be able to relate to. But speaking of negative crap, an excerpt of your book was published on Alternet, and the internet sort of exploded all over the place. It was called, the title was Lifelong Sexual Monogamy Just Isn't Natural. Here are some other options.
Yeah. So,
that was not our title, by the way.
Okay, so let's first talk about that, because people took major issue with this title and the word natural, but you didn't actually write the title.
No, we didn't. That was, somebody described it as clickbait.
Yes.
It was just pinned onto the article. I think we're going to call it originally Designer Relationships.
But that wasn't very clickable, right?
Right.
Or it wasn't outrageous or sort of provocative, I guess.
Well, you know, and God bless Alternet, because it certainly generated an enormous, you know, this 5,300 Facebook likes for the article now, and God knows how many clicks.
Hundreds and hundreds of comments.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we reached people, and that's exciting. A lot of those comments, though, is interesting, is people will jump on and comment about an article without actually reading it.
What? On the internet? I've never heard of such a thing. That's shocking.
With big judgments and big assumptions about what was being said, and it's, yeah, shocking.
I think the natural part is where it gets kind of one of the places where it gets under people's skin. And I kind of curated the discussion, you know, and the comments as it went on. And this was a theme, like, how dare you say monogamy is not natural? The fact is that as humans, it's really a both-and situation. We do have some, generally in human biology, there is some impulse to pair bond. There is that dyadic structure that exists in most cultures. So there is that. But it's also pretty clear that almost all humans want some measure of sexual variety as well. And so I think we're both monogamous and non-monogamous naturally. And for that reason, the question of whether it's natural or not really isn't very interesting or important. It's what do you do living in the society that we live in, and what kind of choices do you make for yourself? So reference to naturalness is an academic argument that may be of some interest.
It's sort of beyond the point, though, of the whole article. I mean, I that's what I feel like. I feel like some of the comments are not even addressing what you actually say.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and then there's this whole weird strand of comments in the article as well about equating, and I really had not been exposed to this, but equating contemporary polyamorous and swinger models as the equivalent of polygamy in a patriarchal society.
Right, as repressive, as abusive, as ultra conservative and traditional.
Right. Yeah. And also the other piece of this that really weirded me out was this whole alpha male idea. I think it's this manosphere thing, which I've only had peripheral exposure to.
So if people are open to designer relationships and being very flexible within their relationships, then the underdog male will lose out and the powerful male will win all the women.
Okay, well, they haven't clearly read, you know, Tracy Clark Flory just wrote an article about this on Salon called about her husband and what she called him as a beta male, men who are really good at talking about their feelings, men who are sensitive, men who are compassionate, men who are not, you know, alpha males. So she called those guys beta males, and they seem to be getting a lot of action.
Yeah, these guys will sit down and read a book about sex and, you know, realize they can always learn more.
but the so-called alphas, I think they're reading, like, who's that dog trainer guy that...
Oh, God, Caesar. I'm not even going to say his name. Yes.
I know who I mean.
You're not... Caesar Milan?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's that level of thinking about human relationships, and it's very strange.
Tiny but dangerous and simplistic. Okay, so I've got a bunch of questions from listeners that I hope we can all chime in on. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, this one came via email from Randy. Randy first said very sweet things about me. Thank you, Randy.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you'd address the issues of polyamory and open relationships of older folks, particularly how much easier it might be with children grown and out of the house, parents who are no longer alive, wanting to push boundaries later in life, late in life realizations that we can be more open to more love, etc. Also, the challenges of meeting older poly people, especially in areas outside of sex-positive regions like California and New York. Is poly more of a young person's domain? Are there any resources on poly that are aimed toward the older or senior population?
I don't know about resources.
Well, Ken Haslam has a poly geezers group. I think that's on Yahoo, and I think it's in the resource listed in the resource guide for Partners in Passion. And absolutely, there's some evidence that poly is actually perhaps more common among older people than young. Although, you know, with under 30 crowd, I think that it's becoming very, very widespread. But Ken also talks about the advantages of having a poly relationship when you're older and various people may not be so physically fit. You can sort of work around various disabilities with
another person in the, you know, helping out. So why not, you know?
And also Ken also in helping us with our material on aging, because I'm in my mid-50s, Patricia's just turned 50. So we're at the young end for this, but a lot of, you know, people may discover greater fluidity in their sexuality and even greater fluidity in their orientation late in life. So there certainly is a realm for poly in the aging community. And I think we also heard a study at the ASEC conference recently that indicates that people 55 and older who are in poly
report greater marriage satisfaction.
No, it's greater, not marriage. Marriage
Married
equals out.
Oh, okay.
Women in poly marriages are happier than women in monogamous marriages. Men are a little less happy, so it sort of balances out. But they all report more sexual activity, better health, and better overall life satisfaction. This was a Jim Fleckstein's study, and it's in press right now.
Mm. Okay, so we're going to take another break. We got a lot more questions. And if you're a regular listener, you know this. Randy is going to win a prize from Sports Sheets just for sending in that question and getting it read on the air. So Randy, hit me up with your address. Tell me what you want from Sports Sheets and they will send it your way. Well, whose questions are going to be asked next? That's why you have to stay tuned to find out, because two more people are going to win prizes at the very least. Okay, so stay with us. More with Mark and Patricia when we return.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Sports Sheets is the sex toy company that's been keeping couples connected for over 20 years. Their fantasy restraint and sex toy products redefine sexual adventure. From bondage and sexual positioning to strap-ons and role play, Sports Sheets makes a toy for everyone's taste and budget. So go treat yourself to something from Sports Sheets, available wherever great sex products are sold.
Good Vibrations is the San Francisco Bay Area-based women-friendly retailer trusted for more than three decades to provide a comfortable, welcoming, and safe environment for quality sex toys, educational materials, and products that enhance and empower one's sex life. Good Vibrations offers its products at six retail locations in San Francisco, Berkeley, and Oakland, California, and in Brookline, Massachusetts, as well as online at www.goodvibes.com. Online ordering is discreet and trusted. We believe that pleasure is your birthright, and one of our highly trained staff members can help you choose the product that is perfect for you at 1-800-BUY-VIBE. Call us 7 days a week from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Pacific Time at 1-800-289-8423 or visit us online at www.goodvibes.com.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We're talking today with Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson all about their new book, Partners in Passion. And before the break, we answered a listener question. And Mark, do you want to follow up on that?
Yeah, just one further point. I think the study that Patricia was thinking of, talking about marital satisfaction, comes from that Swinging in America book. And what that study showed is that people who self-identify as swingers have a higher level of marital satisfaction than people in the general statistical study of the U.S. population. So I think that's what she was referring to.
Okay, good. So that's a good resource for people. Okay, this email question comes from Patrick. He says, my wife and I decided to be polyamorous in October of last year with the provision that she would only play with other women. You can clearly see the problem there, and I realized that it was an unfair, despicable double standard. So it changed. She has since moved back home to go to college, and I'm stuck here because of work. She's played with other men, which is especially hard for me since our communication has lessened considerably, and I'm really struggling with it. Don't get me wrong, all in caps. I'm not mad that we're poly. I think it's a great thing, but I wonder if you can tell me how to not be afraid of her with other men. I don't know what it is, but it's been giving me nightmares and anxiety attacks since even before we were poly. It just scares the fuck out of me. Part of it is undoubtedly my Christian upbringing weighing me down with some good old-fashioned godly guilt. I'm tired of feeling afraid, and I'm tired of letting that fear hurt my marriage. I don't expect you to give me a magic potion or anything. I just need some advice. I'm seeking help through therapists and medication, but I just want to feel safe in my relationship. I'm reaching out to you because I think that you have educated views on sexuality and can help me. Ma'am, I just want to be not afraid. Well, thank you for calling me ma'am. What do you think about this one?
Wow. I the word that comes to mind is flexibility. And that any time one or many of your partners don't feel comfortable, just because a previous rule was okay and worked, doesn't mean it's forever a rule and it's okay and it works. So that you can always have the right to visit and discuss and find things that are very mutually satisfying.
So who do you think needs to be flexible here? So you're saying the wife.
I think everyone involved.
Everyone. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that we talk about jealousy in the book, and there are various kinds of jealousy. And sometimes jealousy is really a kind of, you know, almost paranoid or delusional way of thinking, but sometimes it's very real and genuine, and it points to something that's an issue that's unresolved in the relationship in one way or another. And it, in any event, it's something that it is existing and the relationship exists as well. And it really behooves the people in the relationship to address it. So it's not just something that this emailer should think of as something that he's got to work out on his own. There's got to be some communication with his wife about it as well. And it may mean that, you know, during this time of separation that we have a different arrangement. Or
you could always take a break from being poly. I mean, we do have a great story from a couple that was started out monogamous, raised their children, started swinging, fell in love with a couple, were poly for a long, long period of time, and then went back to being monogamous for a period of time because they felt like that's what their relationship needed. They've since fallen in love again, and now they're in a polyamorous relationship. So it's that relationships are relational. So if there feels like there's an emotional issue in the relationship, it's everybody's, should
responsibility to try and address it.
And tend to it, yes. You always work on yourself regardless of what's going on. But if the relationship feels wounded, it's a relational issue. Relating will be the way out of finding equilibrium again.
Yeah, it seems to me the timing of it is interesting. Like, just as they had kind of agreed, okay, we're going to take this rule of no men off the table, then they were suddenly separated and the anxiety ramped way, way up. And I think it's because this big part of their relationship had destabilized, which is that they lived together. They had constant access to each other. So that piece destabilizes it. And then on top of it, she's also seeing men for the first time, and that like further destabilizes it. So I feel like I think he feels bad about feeling so jealous, clearly in this letter, right? He wants to be better. He wants to feel something different, but I think you have to kind of own up that this is how you feel, and it gives you this intense anxiety. So something is going on and something needs to be addressed. And it's not just, like Mark said, his problem. It's the relationship's problem. And so it's both of you who've got to sort of come to it and say, how can we work this out?
Right. And the form of jealousy, well, is, you know, probably abandonment based, hence the night terrors or whatever, the, you know, inability to sleep. And these are serious emotions. I mean,
it's deep stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't just wish it away.
No.
Right.
No. And the poly, gosh, what are poly people ironclad and they boldly go, you know, forward only? I mean, we always, it seems like the whole difference is that, you know, examining and relating and taking things right as they are in this exact moment, not setting on a set of ideals and then forcing yourself to like do it because it looks good on paper.
Right.
Another piece of it, I think that to the extent that we get a little bit critical of poly at points in Partners in Passion or the movement as a whole, but not individual poly people, but something that we've encountered in some groups is a kind of attitude that jealousy is almost a moral failing, that if you're feeling it, you're not evolved.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a very helpful way of thinking. I mean, we're human. We're subject to these emotions. As you pointed out, this is a relationship that's under stress because of the separation. So be compassionate with yourself. Realize that it's normal to feel jealous in that kind of setting. And maybe think about renegotiating your agreements for a while.
Yeah, until you can be together again. And then, you know, because you want to have a strong foundation with your primary partners or your part, you know, within and amongst you before you branch out. If that's feeling weak and you branch out on top of that, you may be throwing away goodwill and a wonderful, you know, arrangement.
Okay, we have time for one more. We've got to do a quick answer to this, but I kind of feel like I know what the answer is. This is an email from Scott. My wife, who's 27, and I, who's 30, have always believed that to have a great relationship, you have to work on your relationship. We've been together for 8 years. We've been married for 3. We're incredibly in love. We are the couple that talk, cuddle, kiss, and touch each other all the time and truly enjoy spending time with each other. In all this work and education, we've read a lot of books on relationships. We've never talked, worked, or educated ourselves on our sex lives. When we dated in college and we were living an hour away from each other, we only saw each other about twice a week, so we were always hot and heavy. Even when we lived in the same town, sex was really hot. About 6 months before we got married, we moved in together, and the sex started to become a little vanilla. Now we're trying to make a baby, and it's become monotonous. We thought that making a baby or trying to have a baby would be more fun. So the gist is, I'm just going to cut to the chase. You know, they feel like there's a lot of sex education books out there that are crap and they're written by people who just keep reiterating the same sort of 101 tips. We want to find a book or a class or something that will help us explore our sexuality with each other. Okay. So first I want to say, Scott, You sent me this question weeks and weeks ago. You didn't even know Mark and Patricia were going to be on the show. But the answer is partners in passion. Obviously. Like, this is like so 100% clear. Like, you were tailor-made for this book. But I wonder what you guys would respond to this with.
Well, we object to the term work on the relationship. We encourage more of a nurturing, tending kind of attitude, because work can imply drudgery. So and maybe that's affecting things right now, and the idea that they're working on making a baby instead of enjoying making a baby. And so that's maybe imposing more pressure.
Another thing that I think might be helpful for this couple is how to have conversations with one another and come up with sexual adventures, an action plan. And we detail questions and how to have that conversation, because until you decide that game plan, you can read all kinds of books and say, oh, I just finished a book on anal sex by Tristan Taramino. Isn't that interesting? And they go, yes, that is interesting. And then it goes back on the shelf, right? Instead of, you know, what would you think? I'm a little curious. So
how, right. So rather than saying, here, I read this book and now we're going to do it, you know, start out with a conversation about what you'd explore and then pick up the book.
Mm.
We've recently been doing events at sex shops, and we hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, you know, this guy comes in and buys a toy for his girlfriend, and he hasn't even talked to her about...
He's like, I want to buy a vibrator for my girlfriend. Which one should I buy? And, you know, you say, well, what kind of vibration does she like? And
what kind of stimulation does she like? What kind of sex do you guys have?
They don't know the answer. They just want to show up with a vibrator. Wow.
Right. Yeah, that's... Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like more... Some conversations and kind of approaching this less as work and more as a, you know, as you say in your book, a co-collaboration
or play. I mean, I think especially around, you know, getting pregnant, it can, we don't have kids, so I don't know, but I've heard that it can become quite a chore. And I think that it's because all of a sudden it's this mission. And if you just get back to
pleasure
and having fun with one another, you know, I suspect it probably makes conception more likely.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for being on the show again. I'm glad we had the whole hour this time.
Yes,
yeah,
too.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Mark Michaels and Patricia Johnson are the authors of Partners in Passion, A Guide to Great Sex, Emotional Intimacy, and Long-Term Love, published by Cleus Press. Find out more about them at michaelsandjohnson.com. Follow them on Twitter and on Facebook at TantraPM. All of these links and more can be found at sexoutloudradio.com. Click on the link for episode resources. You can always find me on Twitter at Tristan Taramino. Special thanks to Kevin, who did the board today. Tune in next week at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be Hilton Alves, author of the book White Girls. Until then, I encourage you to keep the discussion going on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio, and in your own life, take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Sex Out Loud is brought to you by Good Vibrations, creating a buzz since 1977.